The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome back to Hawk and Crowder.
Josh Appel and Steven Gonzalez in for Hawk, Crowder, and Solana today, taking you up until 6 o'clock. Thanks to Mike Cugno from CBS4 for joining us in the first hour. Just heard one of our best of interviews with Tim Allen. Next segment, we'll hear from Westwood One's college football play-by-play voice, Nate Gatter. He'll also be on the call of Patriots Chargers this Saturday, which is obviously a very important game as far as the Dolphins' playoff hopes go. So we'll talk about that and also the college football playoff with my good friend Nate. And that's actually a good segue into what I want to talk about this segment, and it is the college football playoff. And, you know, we alluded it to a bit earlier with Mike Cugno. The first round of games were obviously not that close, right? Notre Dame, Indiana finished as a 10-point loss for Indiana, but we know that they struggled pretty much until the back half of that fourth quarter when they put up those two touchdowns to make the score a little more respectable. SMU got dog-walked at Penn State. Clemson actually put up a great fight against Texas, and they got stopped twice at the one-yard line, or else that's a one-score game late. And then the beloved SEC, their second team that was playing in the first round, Texas obviously, they took the second worst beating of the weekend. Only SMU lost by a bigger margin. And that brings me to what's going on with Kirk Herbstreit. I don't really get what's gotten into him. This is what he said the day after Indiana lost on the road at Notre Dame, if you haven't seen it already. The atmosphere was historic. The game was not. I'm not going to sit here and say why was Indiana in, but Indiana, with what you guys like to talk about, they have 11 wins. They've got to be one of the best teams. Indiana was outclassed in that game. It was not a team that should have been on that field when you consider other teams that could have been there. It's no knock on Indiana. They had a great year. But we've got to move forward with the playoff and hope that the committee does a better job of weighing who the best 12 is versus who's the most deserving. Because by golly, they got 11 wins. They didn't beat anybody, but they got 11 wins. That's a bunch of BS. We need to find the best teams. And last night was incredibly evident just standing on that field and watching the game the way it played out. Now, I'm sorry. What the hell does it mean to find the best teams versus the most deserving? It should only be teams that are deserving to be in the playoff. If that was the case, then we would just go by the preseason rankings and put those top 12 teams in the preseason into the playoff. I'm old enough to remember that when people were complaining about the playoff going from four teams to 12 teams, that it would devalue the regular season. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine anything that would devalue the regular season more than ignoring brutal losses and just going off of your perceived eye test? I don't know what has gotten into Kirk Herbstreit. I think Kirk Herbstreit is an excellent analyst during games. I think he's one of the best in the business, and he's in the position he's at for a reason. But whatever this is that he's doing, especially after what he did last year, as it pertained to Florida State, it's a really bad look for him. And honestly, it's pretty transparent. And I want to read you something else, okay? This is what Kirk Herbstreit and Jesse Palmer said on the day of the 2017 College Football Selection Show when 11-1 Alabama was put in over 10-2 Ohio State, even though Ohio State had two wins that were better, according to the College Football Playoff rankings at the time, than Alabama did. Kirk at the time said, quote, "The losses matter. To lose that way that Ohio State lost to Iowa, it sent a message that the committee couldn't forget." Jesse Palmer, "Wins and losses matter more than resume. Alabama's resume is not even close to Ohio State. They're punishing Ohio State for losing by 31 points to Iowa. The committee really is in love with Alabama. I'm not convinced Alabama is one of the top four teams in the country. I'm not." So Kirk back then wants to harp on losses mattering. And that was specific to his alma mater, Ohio State. Losses mattered in 2017 when it benefited the SEC and Alabama. But this year, when it's to Alabama's detriment, at 9-3 with two losses by double digits, one by double digits, excuse me, to Oklahoma at the end, and another to Vanderbilt, that's it. The argument's over. Tennessee beat Alabama in the regular season. They go into the Shoe. The big, bad SEC. Oh, they would run over everybody in every other conference because it's the SEC and they're better than everybody else. They go into the Shoe and they lose by 25. You want to talk about not looking like they belong on the same field. That was Tennessee. And I'm fine with criticizing Kurt Cignetti and all the crap that he talked before the game. I love Coach Sig. What he's done for that Indiana program is awesome. They earned the right to be in the College Football Playoff this year. It is not their fault that the Big Ten schedule bared out the way it did for them. It's not their fault that Washington and Michigan, who played for a national championship last year, fell off a cliff this season. That is not their fault. And if you look at the margin of victory for Indiana in all these games, except for one or two, they're blowing these teams out. Nebraska, who played within one possession of Ohio State, lost something like 56-7 to Ohio State. This revisionist history that we're doing now, because a team lost in the first round of the playoff to a better team, is asinine. It really is. We're relitigating whether or not these teams deserve to be in. We can't sit around here and say that the Big Ten and the SEC are the two best conferences top to bottom and then not put in an 11-win Indiana team in favor of a 9-3 Alabama team or a 9-3 Ole Miss team or a 9-3 South Carolina team that all have putrid losses on their resumes. Right. Ole Miss, like Lane Kiffin's tweeting out all weekend, noticeably silent when Tennessee's getting the doors blown off of them. But Ole Miss lost to a 4-win Kentucky team at home. I think Florida is better than a lot of people give credit for. But they went on the road and blew a winnable game to Florida at the end of the season, too. The committee is not at fault here. The results in the regular season have to matter. We can't, out of one side of our mouth, say that the regular season is devalued because we are letting more teams into the College Football Playoff, and then turn around and say, well, who are the best teams versus the most deserving teams? It's the most deserving team that deserves to get in. Why is that a hot take? Why is Kirk Herbstreit coming around and doubling and tripling down on this horrific take that's bad for the sport?
I think the better take would be having a not, like, I personally love having a 12-team playoff. And while I don't want to devalue conference championships, I don't think that Arizona State and Boise State should have a bye when you have teams like Notre Dame, who aren't even in a conference, but they're a much better team. Like, that I do have a problem with.
And that's fair. I think we can look at seeding issues and things to address that moving forward. Because I think, number one, you'd also avoid these blowouts if you have the Boise States and the Arizona States playing in the first round against these teams. You probably get better games early on.
Yeah, like a Boise State Indiana would make a whole lot more sense than Indiana getting the doors blown off of them by Notre Dame. They're not even in the same ballgame.
And how about Oregon, the number one team in the country, consensus, having the single toughest road to winning a national championship.
Absolutely.
Out of the rest of the teams in the tournament.
They got to go and take on Ohio State now, neutral field.
Right, who they already beat earlier in the season.
Like Oregon now gets stripped of having a home game in the playoffs.
Right.
And now they have to go face probably what's the most talented roster in all of college sports. Right now, I believe that Ohio State team can go toe-to-toe with anyone.
I agree with you. And I think seeding needs to be addressed. But as far as big picture, who deserves to be in, who doesn't deserve to be in, that's the conversation. It's not who my eyes say are the best. Would Alabama have given Notre Dame a closer matchup? Yeah, maybe, probably. But guess what? They didn't earn their way in.
Absolutely.
They lost to two horrific teams in the SEC. Sorry, there goes your opportunity to play for a national championship. Like, cut and dry. That's it. Most deserving versus best. It's the most deserving. And I don't understand why I have to get all up in arms and boo again Kirk Herbstreit over what should be obvious. Don't devalue the regular season by saying that teams, we shouldn't be going off of whether or not they deserve or don't deserve to be in. Indiana went 11-1 in the Big Ten.
Without a doubt, they need to be in.
They blew everybody out.
Yeah,
they lost to Ohio State. Yeah, they didn't look great in that game. Yeah, they didn't look great against Notre Dame, but guess what? They got in. TCU got blown out in the national championship when they went up against Georgia 66-7. Blowouts happen. What do you think the first round of the NFL playoffs might look like in some of these games?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the first round of the college basketball tournament is going to look like? I don't know.
I'm a big Kirk Herbstreit fan too. Like I really
so am I.
Enjoy hearing him, like hearing his takes and stuff. But when you hear something like this, it's like you're not paying attention, man. Because obviously that Indiana team belongs in the playoffs. That they might have had a bad draw and had to go up against Notre Dame at Notre Dame. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean they don't belong.
It's not even that. It's this idea that we can just do an eye test and say this is the best team.
Right.
And like I saw people saying that Florida State had a top five roster in the country at the beginning of the season. If we're going off of that, I mean,
yeah, forget the fact that they had nine losses.
It does not compute at all. The games have to matter. And Alabama, yeah, do they have better wins than Indiana did? And this is just using Indiana as an example, or SMU. Absolutely. But the losses have to matter too. Kirk Herbstreit said as much in 2017. Enough about Kirk Herbstreit. We'll get Nate Gatter's thoughts on that in the next segment. You know, I said earlier, I started the show by telling the story before we get to headlines. Somebody texted it about how I felt about the McRib. I mentioned the story of walking to the Panthers game last night and seeing a child throwing up in the concourse. And my first thought was, oh, well, he must have had a McRib before going to the Panthers game. And so I let Hawk know that. And he said, or he just found out that you were hosting today's show. Either or. Let's get to headlines with Steven.
All right. Headlines brought to you by Doral Kia. At Doral Kia, choose from over 500 new Kia models in inventory like the Sportage, Sorento, and Telluride. Remember, when it comes to Kia, the great deals are at Doral Kia. Packers win Thursday night football over the Saints 34-0, first shutout of the season. Packers looking really strong on both ends of the football. Seems like they can probably make a run deep in the NFC. The Dolphins will take on the Browns this Sunday. A win would keep playoff hopes alive, assuming that on Saturday either the Chargers or the Broncos are losing on Saturday. Christmas Day football on Netflix tomorrow. Chiefs versus Steelers, 1 p.m. Ravens versus Texans, 4:30 p.m. For you Beyonce fans out there, catch the halftime show of the 4:30 game. We got a bowl game today. The USF Bulls, Josh Appel, plus three on the Bulls. He's hammering that. They take on San Jose State in the Hawaii Bowl, 8 p.m. The Canes will take on the Iowa State in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, Saturday, 3:30 from Orlando in Camping World Stadium. They're playing lots on the line. That trophy is pretty nice. It's a functional toaster.
It's a real toaster.
Yeah, that's exciting stuff. Some bad news for the Miami Heat. Drew Smith, season-ending Achilles tendon tear in last night's game. But they did win against the Brooklyn Nets, 95-110. Heat's next game will be against the Orlando Magic as they look to get revenge after blowing a 22-point fourth-quarter lead just a few nights ago. Game will tip at 7 p.m. on Thursday night against the Magic. NBA five-game slate on Christmas Day. Game starting all the way from noon to 10:30 p.m. The Spurs and the Knicks, Timberwolves and Mavericks, 76ers and Celtics, Lakers and Warriors, and Nuggets and Suns. The Panthers had a bad night last night against the Lightning. They snapped a four-game win streak. They split the home-and-home series with the Lightning, both teams winning on the road. Very physical game.
Yeah, good thing Matthew Tkachuk is okay. And I hope that dirty, rotten Nikita Kucherov gets the suspension he deserves after that dirty, rotten knee-on-knee hit to Matthew Tkachuk that earned him a 5-minute major and a game misconduct.
I think you're going to start booing a lot at sporting events from now on. I think that brought out a new...
Yeah, it elicited a big boo from me for the first time in a long time.
The Cats will be back on the ice on Saturday after a decent break. They'll take on the Canadiens at 1 p.m. from Amerant Bank Arena. Now time for your weather, sponsored by DeMesmin and Dover Law Firm, youraccidentattorneys.com. Free consultations 24/7 at 866-954-MORE. Weather here at El Portal, Florida, 75 degrees, no chance of rain. It is pretty humid outside. Unfortunately, Christmas Day does seem like it will have some rain tomorrow.
Well, that's fine. We'll be inside all day watching movies and watching the NFL.
Yep. Give me some Beyonce.
And Beyonce. All right. So we've got Nate Gatter, Westwood One's college football voice. He's also doing Patriot Chargers this Saturday. He'll join us next. We'll talk some NFL. We'll talk some college football. That's next on Hockman and Crowder.
This is the Hock and Crowder Show.
I wake up. I piss excellence.
Hock and Crowder.
You haven't played the Grinch song yet. I was hoping you would at this point. It's all right. Josh Appel, Steven Gonzalez in for Hot Crowder and Solana and Jimmy. Taking you up till 6 o'clock. We'll be back with you on Thursday, and then Hawk and the rest of the guys, Hot Crowder, Solana, Jimmy, will be back on Friday doing the normal show. Merry Christmas Eve. Happy almost Hanukkah. Thanks to Mike Cuno for joining us in the 2 o'clock hour. Pleased to welcome on now good friend of mine, Nate Gatter, Westwood One. He's their voice of the college football. And he'll also be on the call of a very important game as far as the Dolphins and their playoff hopes are concerned. He'll be on the call for Patriots Chargers this Saturday for Westwood One. Nate joins us on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Shop hundreds of Toyotas indoors in one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. Nate, what a pleasure. Time of our lives. Thanks for taking the time.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. First off, before we get into college football, before we get into that Patriots-Chargers game, we were talking earlier in the show. I went to the Panthers game last night, and the actions of one dirty, rotten player on the Lightning elicited such a visceral reaction from me in the arena that I let out a loud and powerful boo. And my question to you, when is the last time that you booed something or someone at a sporting event?
Oh, that's a really good question. So if it's at a big arena, probably even the size of that one, and certainly if it's at an outdoor stadium, I don't generally bother because it's like it's just kind of getting lost. So two things come to mind. The last time I can remember doing it with any regularity was when I was in high school, and my dad and my brother and I were frequent attendees of the St. Louis Billikens basketball games here in St. Louis. That was during the Rick Majerus's tenure. And we were big Billikens fans, and the team was really good. And that's kind of a smaller arena. It's still professional size, you know, professional feel to it. It's got 10,000 seats or so. But it's a little bit smaller, and so I definitely was more apt for a little heckling or a little booing then, because it felt like every person was a more important part of the crowd than if you're one of 70,000 or more. The other one that comes to mind is a specific event at Busch Stadium when the Cardinals were hosting the Mets this past season. And, you know, there's not a lot to get worked up about with the Cardinals one way or the other. If anything, St. Louis fans are grumbling about the team. But Pete Alonso accidentally tossed was it maybe Mason Wynn's first hit? I don't remember. It was somebody's first major league hit, and he accidentally... He was persona not just the rest of that game or that series, but I don't know that he will ever shake that. That was probably the loudest booze Busch Stadium gave anyone all season, because it wasn't a particularly volatile season emotionally. So that's maybe a more specific answer than you were looking for. But, yeah, I'm not a big boo guy anymore, but I also don't have the big booming voice like you do. If I had a Josh Appel voice,
stop it.
I'd probably boo all the time.
We all hear what's coming through that phone line right now. Don't sell yourself short. Nate Gatter of Westwood One joining us. Nate, you got the NFL coming up on Saturday, Patriots Chargers, but I want to talk college football first. That's the your main package for Westwood One. You've seen a lot of these teams that are still in the college football playoff, obviously in the first round as well. What did you make of the first weekend of games? And we'll get to more on just the general conversation outside of that in a moment, but just what did you make of the first round?
Yeah, I mean, obviously not hyper-competitive games. I think Texas and Clemson was competitive in the way that college games are, which is that there was some back and forth, and Clemson showed fight in the second half. And as compared to the NFL, I think college teams can't be expected to manage the game and execute as well down the stretch, such that a close competitive game remains close on the scoreboard all the way to the end. You know, college games, and you can see this in Vegas lines and everything, college games are always a little more spread to them, and they just have the tendency to get apart from one another. I will say also that I think this is the nature of college football as compared to the NFL. Well, I mean, the NFL has blowouts too, but college football, blowouts are not unusual, even in big games. I mean, what was it last year or the year before on the, you know, Saturday night featured ABC game where Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit were getting blowout after blowout after blowout, even in big games that were really pumped up. Sometimes that happens. So I don't know. My feeling is it's a shame. First of all, I mean, Kirk Herbstreit saying something to the effect of it's not about the most deserving, it's about the best, is completely insane to me. I don't know how you could say that with a straight face. At that point, why even bother playing the games? We'll just ask Kirk who we think are the 12 most talented rosters. We'll throw them out there, and that's it. We'll just skip right to the playoff. It'll be better weather. Everybody will be happy. We'll knock the season out in a couple weeks. On top of that, I don't see how you can be okay with not having a path for teams from smaller leagues. Obviously, everybody recognizes the depth of the SEC, but to turn this into an indictment of smaller conferences, let alone of the Big Ten, because Indiana at 11-1 lost handily to Notre Dame. Okay, well, Notre Dame's not even in a conference. And Tennessee at 10-2 got dog-walked by Ohio State, so I don't really see how you take away from that that a bunch of 9-3 SEC teams would have added to the quality of the playoffs. So I got to be honest, the general ESPN messaging missing would be right now.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I would love to know what the reaction would have been like from the Herbstreit of the world if, say, that Tennessee-Ohio State game was the first game everybody watched on Friday night, if the same conversation persisted through the entire weekend solely about Indiana. Because I found
that's
it
a great point.
Very interesting.
Kind of already, yeah.
Very interesting how there was nary a peep about Tennessee. Lane Kiffin was all over Twitter before the Tennessee game, talking about all the games that were blowouts before, and then Tennessee loses by 25 and was never in the game. And again, not a peep from these people, which gives away the game.
It really does. And then it felt like they got backed into a corner to the point that Herbstreit basically said the quiet part out loud when he says it's not about deserving, it's about best. And at that point, the message that you're sending to fans is don't even bother watching the regular season. Like, why are millions of people supposed to tune in to watch the regular season if you're saying, whoever wins or loses, we know who's good, right? We know the good brands. We know the kids who've got the most stars next to their name. Okay, so they lost to 4-8 Kentucky. Okay, so they lost to 6-6 Vanderbilt or 6-6 Oklahoma. Embarrassed them. They didn't even score a touchdown. Like, who cares? We know they've got good players. Okay. I mean, then I don't understand why we bother. And I'll tell you this too. It's sad. And I saw the awful announcing column. I think it was Matt Yoder's column that got a lot of traction talking about kind of contrasting this against March Madness and how we're missing the mark. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think there's a push in March Madness, to be honest, to try to drag us in this direction from a lot of power conference coaches who spend the time talking about we need to expand to 76. We need to stop handing out so many bids to these small schools. everybody knows, it's not really until the second round, if not the Sweet 16, that the tournament really starts with all the big schools who are actually good. Like, that's not the point. If you're an SEC head coach of a football team or a basketball team, yes, obviously to you, the point is competing for a national championship, and let's just cut to the chase. If you're a fan, the point is the Cinderellas in March Madness, right. And it might become that in the playoff. You know, who knows? Boise State could shock us and beat Penn State, and that could become one of the defining elements of this expanded playoff and where we all point to that and say that's something that never could have happened before. So I think those guys either are willing to pretend they don't see the point because it's in their self-interest, or they genuinely, just from their point of view, can't understand that that's not what this is really about. And I hope that we can do a better job collectively of remembering what is the point and remembering what we love about it. Because mm-hmm. I'll tell you this, even the – and I have the luxury of this because I don't get paid to be a talking head who gives an opinion during the day when it's really hard to get people to watch your channel. I have, as you do, you the luxury of working on games where people are going to watch and listen for the game regardless of the opinions that are presented, so you don't need a lot of that. At the same time, I had a lot of fun this year going to a lot of places, seeing a lot of teams, including at games that were not particularly high profile and had low stakes for the playoffs. Missouri and Oklahoma in November was an amazing game, and we had a blast doing it, even though neither one of those teams was sniffing the playoff at that point, and Missouri had its backup quarterback in the game. It was still a lot of fun, and it was still a packed stadium of people who were having fun and invested. That's what college football is about. It's about the pride that people take in their schools. It's about regional rivalries. It's about bragging rights. It's about putting these kids out there so that we can watch them perform and we can revel in the athletic accomplishments, yes, but also in the atmosphere, in the pageantry, in the fun. And I just don't care that much about getting bogged down in splitting hairs between the number 12 team and the number 13 team and wringing my hands about whether 9-3 Alabama needed to be in the playoff to let it dilute the fun. Like, let's just make the fun the main thing.
Totally agree with you. And you are so much more well-spoken about that than I was in the last. I was breathing fire because I couldn't wrap my mind around what Kirk Herbstreit was saying. It feels like people like I expected from a Paul Feinbaum, from a Herbstreit type, it's like he doesn't hear the words that are coming out of his mouth. But enough about Kirk.
It really is, because I hold him in very high esteem. He's forgotten more about college football than I'll ever know. And it's just this year in particular, it seems like he's just lost the plot a little bit.
Yeah, well, we're just a couple of mouth-breathing fringe fans or whatever he classified us as. I was going to ask you about some of the changes that you would want just generally to the format, but it seems like everybody agrees the seeding might need to be revisited a bit with the college football playoff. But with all that being said, we don't have to get bogged into that. I know you're up against it here, and I appreciate you taking the time. Nate Gatter of Westwood One, he's the voice of college football for Westwood. He's also going to be on the call for Patriots Chargers this Saturday on Westwood. Like I said earlier, you've seen a decent number of the teams still alive in the CFP. Is the favorite still Oregon, and is there a sleeper team maybe that you think could make a run to the championship game?
This is kind of easy way out answer. I think the favorite is whoever wins Oregon-Ohio State. I haven't checked where Vegas has that. I know we did Oregon and Ohio State in Eugene in October, which was probably my favorite game of the year. Just an unbelievable place to experience a game. Not one of the bigger stadiums that we were in, but man, that place was rocking. It was such a fun football game to watch. A lot of great plays, a couple of head-scratcher moments, kind of your classic helter-skelter college football game between a couple of great teams. It would not surprise me at all to see Ohio State, if they put their best foot forward, win that game on a neutral-ish field, even though it's, you know, obviously closer to Oregon than it is to Ohio State. I would say Rose Bowl is as neutral as it gets with those 50-50 crowd shots. It would not surprise me to see Ohio State win the game, and I think probably the winner of that game is the favorite. The sleeper team that I like is Notre Dame, because I think they do a lot of things well that translate and are consistent. They do a good job at the line of scrimmage. They run the ball really well. Jeremiah Love is maybe the least talked about college football player in the country who fits into the truly elite tier. I mean, I expect him to be among the 3, 5, 7 highest favorites for the Heisman Trophy next year, and I don't think he gets the level of discussion nationally that he probably deserves. to me, that's a team that defends, a team that controls line of scrimmage, a team that runs the football and has a veteran quarterback who generally makes good decisions. That's the kind of game that's going to travel and is going to play consistently, even on big stages. I think there's a lot to like if they can get through Georgia, which is more plausible with Stockton at quarterback than it would have been with Beck. I think Stockton has a great, great arm, but you're just putting a kid in a situation where he's really never been before, and we'll see how he responds. Georgia will have the benefit of that extra week of preparation. My expectation is that the winner of Ohio State and Oregon will play the winner of Georgia and Notre Dame for the national championship. And I think if you force me to pick a winner right now, I think I would go with Ohio State, but man, it's going to be a razor thin margin for them against Oregon if they win.
So here's what's next. Quarterfinals on New Year's Eve, Penn State, Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl, and then three games on New Year's Day, the Peach Bowl, Texas, Arizona State, Rose Bowl, the aforementioned Ohio State, Oregon. Can't wait to see what that field looks like. Always quality pitch surfaces there. And the Sugar Bowl, Notre Dame, Georgia, that closes out the day on New Year's Day next Wednesday. Let's shift gears quickly before you get out of here. You're doing Chargers, Patriots on Saturday. The Dolphins need a Chargers loss this week and next week, coupled with a Colts loss or two Broncos losses and a Colts loss. Just since you're doing this game, do you see a scenario where the Patriots pull off the upset? And if they do, what has to happen?
I'm struggled to see one, Josh. I mean, you know, I don't care who wins the game. I would like to see a close and competitive game. I think as a play-by-play guy, that's the main thing you always hope for. And so in that sense, like, I'd love to see the Patriots surprise people and, you know, maybe get out to a lead the way they did against Buffalo and force the Chargers to put the ball in the air and see Justin Herbert play from behind. The Chargers are a bit beat up. You know, they battled injuries in the secondary. The part that would scare me from the Patriots standpoint, I mean, there are a lot, but it's a young quarterback behind a less than stellar offensive line against the Chargers defensive front that is pretty healthy and pretty talented. I mean, I think, you know, obviously Joey Bosa is not the player that he was a few years ago, nor probably is Khalil Mack, but Khalil Mack has put together some really, really good season. I mean, what, he had 17 sacks last year. He sacked 30 quarterbacks in the 3 years he's been with the Chargers. When he's healthy, he's still a really dynamic player. And they have Tui Polotu up front too, who has been really good and leads them in sacks this year. So my concern would be that pass rush is just going to be difficult for them to handle. And then Drake May is going to really struggle if he's under consistent pressure. I think from the Patriots standpoint, then the answer is find a way to establish the run and try to wear the Chargers down a little bit, try to force some of the guys they have in that secondary that's pretty young and a little bit beat up to tackle and see if you can control the clock. Because that's the good news for them is the Chargers, because being a run-first team the way they are, even if J.K. Dobbins is still out with that MCL issue, you can play a short game, if you will, against the Chargers. Like, both teams, I think, in this game are going to be looking to keep the clock moving when they have the ball, which does, in theory, favor the underdog because it just limits the number of possessions and kind of exposes the game more to a random bounce of the ball here or there. But I have a hard time seeing the path. I mean, the Patriots are 3-12, and it's for not just one but multiple good reasons, and the Chargers have a lot to play for.
All right. Well, if you're a Dolphins fan, I'm sure that was really encouraging for you to hear. Nate Gatter of Westwood One, he's the voice of their college football package. He'll also be on the call for Chargers-Patriots this Saturday. My good friend Nate, thanks so much for taking the time. Merry Christmas Eve. Happy Christmas Eve. Hope you have a great holiday and a great call this weekend. Appreciate you taking some time today.
Josh, you too. Thanks a lot for having me.
No problem. That's Nate Gatter, Westwood One, play-by-play voice of college football. And again, he'll be doing Patriots Chargers this Saturday. Back with more Hawk and Crowder after this.
This is the Hawk and Crowder Show.
Is Mike Hatton here?
What's his name?
Mike Hatts Nova. If I mispronounce Mike Hatt's name, I do apologize.
Hawk and Crowder.